Oh, that music you're going to be hearing, probably likely hearing on Sunday. That's CBS music, intro music for this year's Super Bowl, and been around for quite a while now. And we're going to be talking about this year's Super Bowl later on, along about 11:45 or so, with our guest Pete Doherty. But right now, we're going to take a look at the history of the Packers at the Super Bowl with our guest Cliff Crystal. He's the official historian of the Green Bay Packers from Green Bay, spent 36 years as a sports writer. He wrote for the Manitowoc Herald Times, the Green Bay Press Gazette, Milwaukee Journal, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And his four-volume book series on the history of the Packers is wonderful. It's titled The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers 1919 to 2019. So as we talk with Cliff, I hope you'll join in. What do you want to know about Packers history? Who's your favorite player from the past, maybe? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Cliff Crystal, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
My pleasure.
You know, I had some fun talking with you when your book series came out. I remember interviewing you and team president Mark Murphy at a special WPR member event at Lambeau Field. So it's always great to talk with you. And, you know, that book series, it goes to 2019. Are you going to, are you keeping track since then?
Yes, still working as the team historian and keeping my records and files, and book is still available.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful book, and I really enjoyed reading it. Well, Packers history, and maybe as it relates to the Super Bowl, let's talk a little about that. The Super Bowl hasn't been around really for all that long. I think the first Super Bowl was in 1967. And the Packers, of course, played a role in it. But why was it created in the first place, or what were the conditions around it? I think is kind of interesting.
Well, in 1960, the American Football League started play with eight teams. And with television contracts now in play, unlike in earlier years when the NFL faced competition like with the All-American Football Conference after World War II. Television in play, the AFL owners were able to come to agreement with the networks on some lucrative contracts and were competitive in signing players, draft picks, and the cost of doing business in the NFL skyrocketed. And as a result, the owners of the two leagues eventually determined it would be wiser to merge. And once they did, so when the Packers played in the first two Super Bowls and won both, the leagues were still separate, but the merger had been agreed to, which brought about the Super Bowl. And then 1970 was the first year when after the first Super Bowl after the merger had taken effect.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And back then, today it's like a national holiday almost. What do you got, 110 million people are expected to see it. There's, what, 330 million or so in living in the U.S., so that's like one in three people in this country will be watching it. Wasn't that big a deal back in 1967? And in fact, I think, weren't there two networks? Both CBS and NBC covered it?
Yeah, one was, CBS was the NFL's network. I think it was NBC was the AFL's network. And so that game was broadcast by two networks. It was not sold out. And it was really anticlimactic. the Packers beat Dallas both years to reach the Super Bowl. And when they beat the Cowboys, they were declared NFL champions. And actually, it was after the Ice Bowl when they were declared, when they beat the Cowboys and were credited with being the first team in the history of the NFL to win three straight championships under a playoff format. So the Super Bowl wasn't really taken that seriously until the Jets beat the Colts in Super Bowl III. And the public viewed the game as being now being competitive. First two Super Bowls, I think it was just taken for granted that the Packers were going to beat the AFL champion.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And there's some pretty interesting history of those first couple of games. Of course, Max McGee comes almost immediately to mind when it comes to that early history.
Yes, and I don't know if how true that story was. McGee even admitted at some point in his life, he told the story so many times, he didn't know how much of it, but it was true. Dave Hanner, who was in charge of bed checks that night, insisted, he was a longtime player, assistant coach, scout with the Packers, insisted that he checked McGee's room at least twice and that there was no way he snuck out that night. So, who knows?
Yeah, I remember his comment there saying to Boyd Dowler, supposedly before the game, "I hope you don't get hurt today because I am hungover," or something like that.
Yeah. One thing, again, that makes the story a little bit suspicious is that McGee was more a ladies' man than a big drinker, from everything I've heard.
Yeah. Oh, man. So the Packers won both of those. And I actually watched. I was a young guy, a very young guy. I watched the game with my first game and second game with my dad and my brothers. And it was kind of a big event for us because the Packers were in it. But I can't imagine that the audiences were all that large. You had the Packers versus what, Kansas City in the first
Kansas.
One?
Yeah, I remember really watching it as a college student. The Chiefs had a lot of talent. They just had some glaring weaknesses that the Packers exploited. And Oakland was a good team, too, probably better than the score indicated. But I think, they were facing Vince Lombardi in a championship game, and nobody in the NFL had fared well, very well in those situations either.
You know, in the early days of football, many teams didn't draft black players. And what was the Packers' stance on integrating the team? And I know there were black players who really helped the Packers to success in the Super Bowl 1 and 2.
No question. I mean, that was the strength of the team. Lombardi had an open-door policy from the beginning when he took over as coach in 1959, and that was at a time when some teams had quotas. And he inherited, I think it was two or three black players, and by the time he won his third straight championship, Super Bowl II, he had six black starters just on defense, and five of them started in the Pro Bowl. That was clearly the strength of the team. The early championships, pre-Super Bowl championships in 61 and 62, the Packers were built around their running game, Hornung and Taylor in the power sweep, and their defense to a degree. In the last three championships, they were built around their defense. Bart Starr had an MVP year in 66, but in 65 and 67, he wasn't even a Pro Bowl quarterback.
Amazing. Irene in Phillips, Wisconsin, has something for us. Let's go to Irene. Hi, thanks for calling. Hi, Irene, are you there?
I'm here. Let me turn my radio on. I'm listening to your guest. I'm a Bears fan, but my late husband and I were Packer fans for Super Bowl II. We went down to the Orange Bowl. Our tickets were about $12 a piece. The Orange Bowl was not even filled, and we played the Raiders. I don't even remember the score, but we met Vince Lombardi the night before the game and shook his hand and wished him and his group well. He was with family and friends.
Oh.
And that you don't see that anymore. You don't see a lick of them.
Yeah, you're right about that, Irene, I think. Comment on that, Cliff?
Yeah, actually, it's interesting because the Packers, to show how different things were, the Packers stayed at a basically ma-and-pa motel in Fort Lauderdale. And Bart Starr's pregame press conference on Saturday, I believe it was conducted. He was sitting in a lawn chair around the pool at that hotel with just a little small cluster of reporters asking him questions.
Oh, man. Oh, man. She mentioned the Bears and, you know, the Lombardi Trophy. Of course, named after Vince Lombardi, goes to the winner of the Super Bowl, and there were Bears fans that thought it should have been named the Halas Trophy.
The NFC Championship Trophy is named the Halas Trophy, and I believe that the Lombardi Trophy was named first. Shortly after he died, obviously George Halas was a great coach, won 6 championships, same number as Curly Lambeau. But I think that they were known more for, and even Lombardi to a degree, for their success in the pre-Super Bowl era,
yeah.
Which I also find unfortunate that, a lot of people treat the history of the NFL like it started with the first Super Bowl, and those championships won by teams prior to that don't really count, which is ridiculous in my standpoint.
Mike in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. I wonder if Mr. Crystal is familiar with Willie Davis's autobiography. I had a serendipitous chance to meet him when he ran a radio station in Milwaukee, and I called, and we had some discussions because of some of the history. But what made me, he told me some stories about when Lombardi was in the hospital on his deathbed. Willie Davis went to visit him, and Lombardi told Willie Davis, he said, "You were the best trade I ever made." And that story came right from Mr. Davis, and I'm wondering if the book that Willie Davis wrote has gotten any interest, because to me, that story between Lombardi and Davis is one that's just, it still brings tears to my eyes to think that Lombardi was more of a father to Willie Davis, and he made those comments to me directly. And have you ever heard of the book by Willie Davis or any knowledge about his book?
Yeah, I have a copy. I've read at least parts of it. I think there's no question Lombardi felt that way about all of his players, and particularly his black players. As Bob Skowronski said, he treated all of them the same. And I think that was very true in Green Bay, and probably not true in a lot of the other NFL cities at the time. It's interesting that before Willie died, I wrote a story, it's probably 4 or 5 years ago now, for our website about how the Packers really were successful and won those last 3 championships because of Lombardi's open-minded approach, and that the key to the success of those teams was their black starters on defense.
Yeah.
Davis, Willie Davis is in the Hall of Fame. Herb Adderley, Willie Wood, Dave Robinson, they're all in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, Lionel Aldridge was the other starter, and Bob Jeter was a Pro Bowl starter that year. So, you know, that was the strength of the team. And I got a note from Willie thanking me that finally somebody had given them the credit that they were due. And I don't think there's any question about it. Yeah. And is was Willie Davis the greatest trade Lombardi ever made? I'm sure he said it. How can you argue with him? But I'd also note that the trade for Henry Jordan was a key trade, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And Willie Davis, of course, was successful, so successful on the football field, but he was perhaps even more successful in business afterwards. And I know he made a lot more money after he quit playing football and got into broadcasting and purchasing.
Well, I'm sure he did. You know, some of those players, starters even, were making less than $50,000 when the Packers won Super Bowl I or II.
Yeah. Cliff Crystal, our guest today, the official historian of the Green Bay Packers. We're taking a look at Packers history and quite a bit of it relating to when he was, when the Packers were playing in the Super Bowl, but others' comments as well. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Our engineer today, A. Emily Ralph. Our producer, Clara Neipert. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at Packers history today, the Green Bay Packers history, with our guest, Cliff Crystal, the official historian of the Green Bay Packers. Cliff authored the wonderful book. It's titled The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers 1919 to 2019. Really have enjoyed that book very, very much. Tyrone in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity. Larry, my friend, good morning, good afternoon, late morning, early afternoon to everybody. Tyrone Debbie speaking, Northwest side of Milwaukee, all the Wisconsinites. Mr. Crystal, thank you for the book. I have to get my hands on a couple copies of it there, myself, my nephews. I'll tell you, allow me, Larry, I'll be about a couple minutes here, but my dad and I, to begin with the Super Bowl, I was born in 58, so I feel a little bit better knowing that the year I was born is Super Bowl 58. I got my number up there for the year I was born in, so I feel pretty good about that. But I'm still aching a little bit because we were basically four quarters and about 5 minutes away from being there. That's the part that really still, you know, stings and burns with me and the way that it ended there. Because it was certainly a squandered opportunity when you look at we beat both. Well, we beat Kansas City, too. I mean, we beat Kansas City here. We beat Detroit. And, yeah, we came up through the Bears and Dallas. So, yeah, it was ours to take, you know.
Well, Tyrone, thanks for calling. And I know Pete Doherty is going to have more to comment on about that. But, Cliff, I thought they were going to beat the 49ers, too.
They certainly outplayed him for most of the game. And when a team peaks like that at the end of a season, it's a shame they couldn't take advantage of that opportunity. I think they might have had difficulty beating the Chiefs a second time or.
Yeah.
The Ravens' defense was pretty special, but it would have been a huge thing for the Packers to get to the Super Bowl this first year. But who knows? Maybe it'll make them hungrier for next year.
Yeah.
I think that the Packers losing the 1960 championship against the Philadelphia Eagles was used by Lombardi as kind of a springboard to their future success.
Julia in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm been a fan all of my life, homegrown Wisconsin Packer fan, and wondering if you could just historically tell me, are there any women that have been involved in the organization at any level? You know, are there any women NFL players yet? Are there any women that helped in the organization of the Packers, or were part owners, or significant people.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Julia. Women and the Packers.
Yes, I mean, we have a couple vice presidents, and any number of women working in the in our front office, or, you know, in the business end of the company. Many of them, probably most of them, very very efficient people that have I've leaned on numerous times for help with my work. As for the history of the Packers and its association with women, you know, you can go back to the 1950s, 1950, I believe it was, when the first women's quarterback club in the country was formed in Green Bay among a group of women to support the Packers. There were women involved in the 1950 stock sale and the annual season ticket drive when the Packers were struggling to survive and depended on their gate sales to make $10,000-$15,000 or whatever their net profits were at that time. Those figures are pretty close. They also, I took credit for having the first Women's Ladies Day. I mean, in 1950, as I tell people, for the first 30 years of Packers history, they were perpetually on their deathbed. Yeah. I mean, there was no day that went by when they couldn't have folded. And so in 1950, especially when they reached out to Joe Fan to sell stock, they also realized the benefit of appealing to women and to try to create, expand their fan base. And so they made a serious attempt to get more women involved, to get more women to go in games. And then I will mention this name, and if she wants to Google it, she might come up with a story I wrote about her last year, a woman by the name of Sue Wallen, W-A-L-L-E-N. You could Google that with my name and Packers.com. She was critical to the Packers' success and survival in the 1930s and 40s. She ran she was the manager, ran the desk at the Astor Hotel, where all the players would stay at that point in time. It was downtown Green Bay. All the single players would stay there, and most of them were single back then. And she was called the mother of the Packers because she took such good care of them, looked after them. In fact, Curly Lambeau would instruct his rookies to report to the Astor Hotel and meet up with Sue Wallen, and she'd take care of them when they reported to camp for the first time. It's really a great story, wonderful story about a woman who was, she didn't work for the Packers, but certainly played a key role in their survival just by keeping players happy back then.
Yeah.
Who weren't making a lot of money and were living in a, you know, in a new city, a different climate.
Oh man. Julia, thanks so much for that question. Appreciate it. Dan in Middleton, we'll go to you. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Two quick stories. I'd like your guest to comment on the most colorful Packer of all time, Johnny Blood McNally, who was a friend of our family and visited us when we were kids. And secondly, our senior athletic banquet from a little town in western Wisconsin, Durand. Our guest speaker was Willie Davis, who drove from Green Bay to speak at an evening event and then afterwards drove all the way back to Green Bay, which shows you how tight money was then that they would do such a thing for a small amount of money. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, Johnny Blood, certainly the biggest character in Packers history, and that was his name. The NFL, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, for whatever reason, concocted the name Johnny Blood McNally when he was inducted. But he never played by that name. You can go back and look in any program, any press guide, any newspaper story, any official lineups. the name McNally never appeared. So Johnny Blood McNally never played in the NFL. Johnny Blood did. I think it's actually, to be quite honest, I think it's absurd that people call him Johnny Blood McNally. He was John McNally off the field and Johnny Blood on the field. And that's how he said he preferred to be called. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. It is true that the players, especially in the 60s, would branch out around the state. And even after, you know, Lombardi arrived and the new stadium was built in 57, the Packers still went and spoke in different organizations and different cities and basically to build interest in the team. And wasn't until 61 where the stadium was sold out on a season ticket basis.
And Johnny Blood, so what was so crazy about him?
Just a character.
Okay.
Loved to drink. Green Bay had a thriving red light district when he played, and he loved to visit that section of town and those different houses. He had the vagabond halfback.
All right, there we go. Dan, thanks again. Helen in Little Chute, your turn. Hi, Helen.
I've been a Packer fan since I was 12 years old. I grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I'm 75 now. I had three brothers who we would watch the Packers. They were Lions fans. And what they would do is we'd sit on the living room floor, and the Packers were doing so well. I remember to the left, Dollar, to the right, McGee. And as I recall, Tony Cannadale, wasn't he one of the announcers? In any event, when the Packers would score, my one brother, Rick, would pound on my arm, and every week I would end up with black and blue all over my arms. And to this day, I'm still a Packer fan. I love the Packers. Don't miss any of their games. And my brothers are all, every time we get together, we, you know, have this little dialogue about how the Lions have never gotten to the Super Bowl, but the Packers have. So anyway, I just wanted to say how much I really adore. And Paul Hornung was my favorite player. Right now, Aaron Jones is my favorite player.
Helen, thank you for calling. She mentioned Tony Cannadale. And he did announce, but he had also played.
Right. He was a Lambeau player, mostly through the lean years, late 40s, early 50s. In the Pro Football Hall of Fame, she mentioned Paul Hornung. That's the player and the only player that Vince Lombardi called the greatest player I ever coached. I believe the Forrest Gregg quote were Lombardi has supposedly, allegedly said that Greg was the finest player ever coached. It was one that was fabricated. Even Forrest Gregg couldn't tell you where that quote originated. But anyway, I think if I interviewed probably 30-plus Packers who played for the majority of the Lombardi years, and almost all of them would agree that the Lions of the early 60s were the toughest competition they played during the Lombardi era, more so than the Cowboys or any other team, Giants, Bears. Those Lion teams, my favorite game of all time still was the 1962 Packer-Lion game in stole what was then Green Bay City Stadium, now Lambeau Field, 9-7. Won in the last minute by a Herb Adderley interception and a Paul Hornung field goal. I think when you look back at the rosters of those teams, there were just two outstanding defenses, and the Lions never won a title back then because their offense was a weakness, but the Packers, again, have just a great offense at that time. And then the rematch on Thanksgiving was that memorable game where the the Lions just crushed the Packers, their only loss in 1962.
Yeah. Canadeo reminds me, I'm thinking about announcers, Ray Scott was always my favorite.
Right, he did the TV games for most of that time. Earl Gillespie may have done some games when either on radio or television when Lombardi was coaching, I'm not sure. And then, but the longtime radio guy was Ted Moore.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Rodney in Green Bay, we'll go to you now. Hi, Rodney.
Yes, I've been saying for years, telling a story that I believe I was the warmest fan at the Ice Bowl, because my mother, who is a diehard Packer fan, 8.5 months pregnant, and she climbed all the way up. She was 3 rows from the top. So I often say I was the warmest fan ever there. So.
And the youngest, for sure. And there's always great stories about people claiming to be at the Ice Bowl. I believe Rodney here. But there are some dandies, aren't there, Cliff?
Yeah, I believe anybody that tells me they were at the Ice Bowl, I believe. And Ron Wolf was the one that came up and, you know, made the joke about everybody claims they were at the Ice Bowl. Ron was new to town. You know, when he arrived in 92, that would make a lot of the Packer fans, people who might have been at the Ice Bowl, probably, what, around 50 years old. And so I don't think it would have been unusual for him to meet mostly people when he first got here or went to the Ice Bowl. The crowd there was probably one of the youngest crowds ever at a Packer game, certainly in that time, because a lot of parents back then, and I've had friends tell me this story where their parents just said, hey, I'm not going to go sit out there and freeze, but I'll drive you out to the stadium and you can sit in the seats and you guys, the kids can freeze, which was not unusual back then. I mean, you could be 10, 12 years old and your parents might have dropped you off at a football game and headed home. Plus, because it was so cold, at kickoff, all the ushers or the people that are manning the gates, security people, left. And so the gates were just open that anybody could just could show up and just walk in. And I also know friends who walked right down in the field because there was nobody there maintaining security and watched the game from the sidelines.
Oh, man.
So it was a game unlike really any other because of the weather and then the resulting consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's still controversy around that about who did the blocking to get Bart Starr into the end zone.
Yeah, I think it was Ken Bowman and Jerry Kramer deserve equal credit.
Yeah, Ken never got the credit that he probably deserved, rest his soul, which is too bad. Well, the Packers were in 5 Super Bowls, so that's almost 10% of the Super Bowls, maybe 9% or so. I don't know what my math here on this, but they won 4 out of 5, and won with 3 quarterbacks.
Yeah, New England and Pittsburgh have won 6. San Francisco and Dallas have won 5, and the Packers are next with 4. I know a lot of fans have been disappointed that they didn't win more with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, but those are not easy things to do. Just, look at the NFC North. All the Vikings were an expansion team in 1961, but the Bears and the Lions are 2 of the oldest franchises in the league, along with the Packers. And the Bears have won 1 Super Bowl, and the Vikings and Lions have yet to win any. So I would say count your blessings with 4.
Yes, that's right. I remember watching the Bears' 1 victory would have been, let's see, 1967's, no, not 67, 1997, somewhere in there. I happened to be in Trinidad at the time, and they didn't have television coverage in Trinidad, so I got over to Grenada to watch the game with a bunch of expatriates, to watch the Patriots and the Bears. I forget the year.
I think it was 87.
87, that's, yeah, I was trying to remember when I spent a year in Trinidad. 87.
I will say this. That was one of the greatest defenses in the history of the Super Bowl. And I think if Charlie Martin had not slammed Jim McMahon to the turf and virtually ended his career the following season, the Bears could have had a dynasty.
Yeah.
They didn't have a quarterback after once they lost McMahon.
Well, what's the, you know, you've written extensively, of course, and wrote this wonderful book, which is actually four volumes. What can we learn from knowing sports history?
Well, I think basically what you can learn from any history, that if you know it, you're less likely to repeat the mistakes of the past. And just how teams were built, the Super Bowl teams were built. I mean, basically all NFL champions, going back to 36, the first year of the draft, were built through the draft by drafting and developing players, not by trades, not by free agency. For example, I wrote a column that you can find at our Packers.com website about how this team, this Packer team of last season, was built on the axioms of the game and the history of the game, and quoted people that had told me, offered insight to me throughout my career as a sports writer. For example, number one was John Madden, who told me that you needed to draft your quarterback when you didn't need one, because once you need one, you'll never find one. And basically how true that was. The Jordan Love pick, I never could fathom how fans could criticize that choice. Others as well. I think Jim Finks's famous quote that, coaches coach and players play and general managers manage and owners own. How true that was, that, that was this team this year, that young team that bonded together. Again, the history of the league is that it's a young man's game. And I think that was critical to the success of the Packers this year. And another thing, I think a lot of people probably were wondering, how could a team that lost Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams and Bakhtiari, three of their best players of all time, and improve on last season? And Vince Lombardi was a firm believer in that it was more important to get rid of players than to go out and find players.
Yeah,
that you got better by getting rid of players I quoted him as saying that if you believe a player cannot play up to the same standard as he did the previous season, it's time to get rid of him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was famous for getting rid of players a year too early rather than a year too late, and often before they even reached the age of 30.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Cliff, on that note, that kind of brings us to this year, as we will be talking with Pete Doherty in just a minute. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's always fun to have you on and talk about Packer history, and I hope we can do it again. Thank you, Cliff.
Thanks for having me.
Cliff Crystal, official historian of the Green Bay Packers and author of the book The Greatest Story in Sports, Green Bay Packers 1919 to 2019. And he says he's keeping it up to date. So there you go. All right, coming up, as I said, Pete Doherty is our guest next. And we're going to talk about this year's Super Bowl and probably a little about why the Packers aren't in it with him. And I wanted to also talk with him about how the NFL decides where to host the Super Bowl. That next. I'm Larry Mehler for the Ideas Network.